here. Okay, today we're going to start the fifth dwelling place. We talked about the introduction to it last week, and about how Teresa looks upon 5, 6, and 7 as the three stages of marriage in the Spanish community in which she lived. And this first stage is like the meeting stage, where the man and the woman, kind of get to know each other. They talk back and forth, find out if they're a good match. And then the sixth stage is like the betrothal stage. Sixth dwelling place like the betrothal. And then the seventh is like the marriage itself. And so what this is leading to is a spiritual marriage with Christ. So this is the first step toward that encounter. And so she calls this the meeting stage. And so that kind of implies that there's more of a two-way thing going on here than we saw previously. In the fourth dwelling place, we saw where God would come in and give the person spiritual delights of some kind that will last a very short time. And then maybe give another one a little later, stuff like this. But it was always him giving it to the person. And now we're going to look for more of an interactive kind of a communication between the soul and God. And that begins in this fifth dwelling place. So kind of keep that kind of idea in mind. All the experiences she talks about...
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Mary just got here. All the experiences she's going to talk about here are the experiences that she encountered. But she also says that other people will have other kinds of encounters. And that's to be expected. And she says some people may not have any. And it's not a sign that you're not growing spiritually. You could go through this whole period and not have these special encounters and still be growing spiritually to get to the seventh mansion. So everybody's going to have a different experience. God is going to treat each one of us as if we're the only soul on earth. And that's one of the beauties of this whole thing. Because he's infinite, he can do this. But he's going to treat you as if you're the only soul. So whatever he does with you is going to be, from this point on, it's going to be a very individualistic kind of a thing. He's going to look at you and see, well, what do you need that I can provide for you? And then to help you grow. And that's what he's going to do. And that's what he did to Teresa. So all the things that he talks about, that she talks about him doing with her, are things that he knew she needed for her growth. And so just kind of keep that in mind. Don't expect that each one of us will see all the same kind of things that she did. If we're in this stage, we're going to see different things that are pertinent to us as individuals. And then she'll also tell you, I forget what she says it either here or in her life. I don't remember. But she'll say that when you get to the seventh dwelling place, only you and Jesus can be there. Not even the Blessed Mother can go in there. That's how individual the relationship is. So he's calling you into spiritual marriage with himself. And all these things, the experiences are short. Even when you get to the seventh mansion, when you have that really intense encounter, it's a short thing. Then you go back to the sixth level again. And you come back again. So each time you have an encounter with God, it's going to be a short duration, but he's going to be giving you something new that you didn't have before, a new experience, a new understanding of himself. He does a lot of teaching of himself so that you understand what you're dealing with. And that begins in this stage where the two people are getting to know each other, that communication stage. And so that kind of thing begins there. But so he's going to do two things. He's going to be teaching you about yourself, things you need to know about yourself, but also teaching you about himself so that you have a better relationship and communication. And at this stage, the devil's pretty much powerless. He'll try, but he's not going to have any luck. The only way the devil can get to you once you hit this stage is if you allow him to. If you say, oh, I don't want to do prayer anymore. I want to go back to my righteous life that I had before I started this whole process.
Yeah. Oh, darn, where is that life?
Yeah. We're getting so old, we forget about it.
I forgot what it was like already. So that's kind of where you are at this stage. And she says most people that have gotten through the fourth will go into the fifth. Because it's God controlling you at this point. Controlling like you're a puppet, but he's the one that's directing your soul. He's the one that's feeding your soul with what he knows you need. And a Blessed Mother tells us in one of her messages at Magicoria that when you grow in prayer like this, that when you do exit this life, you don't even hardly notice it. It's like just going to the next room of a house or something, you know.
Yeah.
It's no big traumatic, you know, ripping loose of something or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just kind of an easy kind of a thing. You see the things now that you didn't see before. See your relatives.
Yeah, and you see all the stuff that you believed in that we know was real, but we don't see it.
But now you
that always amazes me.
Right?
We believe all this stuff. We believe it because God said so.
Yeah.
But we don't see any of it. You know, everybody has such faith.
Yeah.
You know, like that. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yes, Sunday we were helping my son Daniel at St. Mary's in Fredericksburg, and the priest gave a really, really good homily. And he said, one of the things people say is that when you get to heaven, you're going to be surprised at who is there because you thought they weren't going to be there.
Yeah.
And you're going to be surprised at who isn't there because you thought they were going to be there. So he said, heaven's full of surprises. And I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of smiling going on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So let's get into the chapter one here. She begins this in 5.1.2.1. Since there are various degrees, and for that reason I say that most enter these places, but I believe that only a few will experience some of the things that I will say are in this room. Even if souls do no more than reach the door, God is being very merciful to them. Although many are called, few are chosen. And so that's how she introduces this thing. So only a few are going to experience a lot of the things she talks about, but you may have totally different experiences, you know. And even if you don't have many, it's not saying that God doesn't favor you. He's going to do for you what he knows you need for your spiritual growth. So again, there's the idea of trust in God. You trust him to do what he knows you need, and he's going to give it to you. Because there are varying degrees, do you decide the degree of encounter? And what should your soul do as it prepares for the encounter with God in this dwelling place? Do you decide the degree of encounter?
I don't think so. It's up to God.
It's up to God. Yeah. Yeah, it's up to God. He's going to decide everything at this point. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what should you do to prepare for whatever it is he wants to give you?
Be open and pray?
Yeah. Do all the things she's been telling us to do. You know, follow the commandments, avoid occasions of sin, try not to have any mortal sin or any venial sin if you can possibly do it, and just do everything for the love of God. She makes the point earlier in the fourth dwelling place that you know, what can I do to pay back to God everything he's done for me? And that theme kind of runs through this at this point. You know, he's giving you everything. He's giving you himself. He's giving you his entire self, body, blood, soul, and divinity. And so what can you do in return? And look at what he sacrificed for you. He sacrificed so much for you. So, you know, so the idea is, am I going to do anything that's going to be an affront to him or an insult to him after everything he's done for me? You know, so she says, no, don't ever get into that mindset. Whatever you do, make sure if God was standing right next to you, he'd be pleased at what it is you're doing. That you're not going to be an insult to what he did for you. And so you kind of get into that mindset. And it kind of goes along with what Brother Lawrence of the Resurrection wrote about practicing the presence of Christ. You practice the understanding, and then that you know that He is right there with you at every moment. And so you're like a constant companion for God. And so you have this kind of understanding that runs through all this stuff too, that God is taking your soul, directing it where it has to go, teaching it what it needs to know, teaching it about Himself, everything you need to know about Him, and you just trust. It's like being on a river, you know, you go with the flow. You just float down the spiritual river, right? And God is your raft. And you just trust in that raft to get you through the river. So those are the kind of things. So our soul, we prepare by always being in a state of grace and always being open to whatever He does send you. And those two things are important. Staying in the state of grace and then being open to whatever it is He sends you. And you never know what that's going to be. So the next one, Teresa says that the objective is to reach this precious pearl of contemplation that we are speaking about. Yet few of us dispose ourselves that the Lord may communicate it to us. In the practice of the virtues that are necessary for arriving at this point, we need very, very much and cannot be careless, neither small things or great. So you're really trying to get your soul into such a state of perfection in love of God that the virtues are there, and there's almost no trace of any kind of vice, that you're always in that state of grace, you're always free of both mortal sin and venial sin, and you're making yourself as pure as possible so that when God encounters you, you are not an insult to Him. If He comes to you and says, I want to draw you to me so I can be your spiritual spouse, you know, you're not going to look to Him like some piece of dirt or something, you know. You want to be as clean and as pure as possible for that encounter.
So, Jim, for venial sins, saying that wrong, just going to daily Mass would remove them?
Yeah. Yeah. The Holy Eucharist takes care of venial sin. The only thing that might be left over is any temporal punishment due for those venial sins. Uh-huh. But the sin itself is gone.
And I thought, I must have read, you know, we hear all this stuff anyway. Our trials and our sufferings are purifications.
Yeah.
That God is purifying our soul. It's a grace.
Right.
Everything.
That's right.
The good and the bad.
Yeah, everything He sends you is preparing your soul for these encounters.
Mm.
And so, sure. You know, so He suffered, so we're going to suffer. He said, take up your cross every day. He didn't say, take up your cross until you get to the fifth dwelling place, and then you don't have it anymore. Now, He never said that. He said, take up your cross every day. And so we're always going to continue to have crosses. We're always going to have to deal with them. But those things are purifying experiences that He's giving us. And so we trust and know that every time He gives you a cross, He's going to give you the grace to bear it. He's never going to give you a cross without the grace to go along with it.
And we learned from the nuns years ago, you never get more than you can handle, right?
Yeah.
God.
And you're not always going to understand what the cross is or why you got it or what it means or anything else. And so that's where trust comes in.
I have to laugh sometimes because we know God has a sense of humor. Where do we get anything? But it's from God. And it's so funny. I had gone to it's a big Carmelite funeral up in St. John the Baptist. There were two churches combined, St. John Bosco, I think, too. There were four priests on the altar and a deacon. There were like hundreds of people there and everything. And right in front of me, God, there's a lady with a lot of children. He had 10 children. I'm mixed up now. 10 and 20. He had 20 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren.
Wow.
And 5 kids. Okay. Well, the church was packed with little kids. Anyway, so the lady is holding a baby. He's like 2. And he wouldn't stop. And through the whole Mass, she rocked.
trying to rock.
And I'm right behind her.
Back and
forth. And I like to see the priest and the altar. And I go,
oh.
So you're rocking the opposite way.
It's like everyone else is quiet in the church, and I'm going like this. I said, I can't rock. So I come to Mass Sunday. There's a lady sitting in front. She always sits in the third row. They're the ones that chat the whole Mass. She rocked. And for no reason. And maybe she had a physical thing. I go, oh, Lord, not 2 days in a row. I mean, it's like I went ballistic. I said,
that's the problem. It's unexpected.
That's right. So you deal with it, right? It's one of your crosses.
And we don't want to trade crosses.
That's
you always
right.
think, oh, yeah, I would rather have that, but no.
Yeah, always accept your own crosses. Yeah. A lot of people think they want to choose their cross, you know. Never get into that nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, if you choose your cross, you don't have the help of God to deal with it. Because you took it on yourself, you chose it, it's yours, baby. You know.
It's yours, baby. That's funny.
Yeah. So, but if he gives it to you, he tells you about the yoke, right?
Yeah.
My cross is a yoke. And so I'm on the other side with you, pulling that load. I'm carrying the heavier part of the burden. I'm helping you carry it. So that's what you do there.
Yeah.
So disposing yourself with that, understanding those things is a huge help in being able to deal with it. Because if you understand that it's coming from God, that He wants you to deal with it, then you approach it totally differently from saying, oh my God, why did I get this? You know, how can I get rid of this thing? You know, you just deal with it. And it's His, you know. And people have all kind of crosses. Some are very temporary, some are permanent. You never know. But you, she says you can't be careless in either small things or great. And so you never let your guard down. You never let your guard down to where Satan could do anything, you know, to try to get you back. And so she makes the point here, the same thing that Blessed Mother was saying that we were talking about earlier. She says, since in some way we can enjoy heaven on earth, be brave in begging the Lord to give us His grace in such a way that nothing will be lacking through our own fault, that He show us the way and strengthen the soul that it may dig until it finds this hidden treasure. The truth is that the treasure lies within our very selves. The treasure, of course, is God Himself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Jesus in the Gospels talks about the pearl of great price and those kind of things. You ever think, ever find it interesting? Maybe we talked about this before. The only gemstone that Jesus ever talks about is a pearl.
Pearl, oh yeah, I never thought about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I never thought.
He never talks about diamonds and rubies and emeralds or anything
right,
else.
A pearl.
He only talks about pearls. Mm. You ever wonder why?
It's hidden, Galilee, maybe.
It's hidden. Know. Pearls are hidden.
Hidden in the oyster.
And Jesus is hidden.
Pearls are in an oyster.
Yeah.
Okay, but the pearl represents a soul. If you think about it, okay. If I take a nice, beautiful pearl and I drop it in vinegar, it begins to dissolve.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like taking a soul and it falls into sin. Begins to lose that grace. But I can take that pearl out of that vinegar, wash it off, put it back into an oyster, and it'll grow back again.
Wow.
So that is like going to confession. And you get all the sanctifying graces back again, and that soul will continue, that pearl will continue to grow and get as big as the oyster wants to make it.
So I have a pearl that happened to. Do you have any oysters?
I don't have any oysters, no.
Okay.
But you can probably find some.
Maybe.
On the Chesapeake Bay. You know, they're bound to have a lot of oysters on Chesapeake Bay.
Wow.
You know, get a little oyster bed in your backyard, a little koi pond or something, and just put it right in there. But I found that very interesting. That I wondered about that. You know, why is he only talking about pearls? And then it kind of, when I read about pearls and what happens to them and all, it kind of made sense to me.
Yeah.
So when she says careless in small things, she means just daily small things that, you know, I guess you can make a mistake. You swear, you stub your toe when you swear. She's saying, you know, control yourself.
Sure. You watch your anger. You watch your impatience. You watch your language. Because people tend to outburst. You know, you don't even think about what you're going to say. Blah, blah, blah. You know, you say something you shouldn't say. And so you always try to control yourself. You know, you try to And you try to be loving to other people, too. Hmm. You see somebody that needs something, you don't say, well, I've got better things to do with my time. I don't have to help that person. If you can do something to make that person's life easier, you do it, you know. Somebody's getting out of their car and they're struggling, you hold the door for them. Help them out of the car.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that mean a lot. Remember what Jesus said? If you give just a cup of cold water to somebody because he is a disciple, you'll get the disciple's reward.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting when you have a lot of kids. Some kids naturally do that.
Yeah.
And other kids wouldn't think of it.
Yeah.
Right from birth.
Yeah.
Right, right. It's in them. And then the way they're trained. You know, the parents mention
things to them. You got to hope that the training helps.
Yeah. Yeah. But some of them have like an intuitive sense like that, you know?
Yes.
When I look at my three grandkids that live with us, one little boy and two girls. Mm. The little boy is very generous with himself.
Just naturally
for other people, you know.
Yeah.
His teachers are always commenting on what a good heart he has, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes the girls get a little bit self-focused.
Snarky.
You know, they'll stand in front of the mirror for an hour.
Right, yeah.
You know, like sometimes they'll do. But you know, a lot of times it's just part of their nature, you know. But the way you raise them, like you said, has a lot to do with it, you know.
To a degree,
But you can also teach them how to do this.
Yeah, that's your cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the idea of being very careful about yourself, about what you say, what you do, this kind of thing, you got to be very careful about
that. One book said, maybe the saints had said it, they probably do it, before you speak, ask the Holy Spirit that I speak the words you want me to speak. You know, that's...
Yeah. Control my tongue.
Yeah. That's also your nature. Some people are more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first question is, how do we dispose ourselves so the Lord may do his work in us? What must we do? Exactly what we've been talking about.
Right. Yeah.
You know, those are all the things. You just try to be aware of the fact that he is in your soul and that he's calling you to union with himself. So if that's not important to you, then you're not going to pay attention to this. Mm-hmm. But if that is important to you, you can try to make sure you're always disposed to let that eventually happen. And that's kind of where you go with that. Next question is, how does self-knowledge and the virtues play a part? And if there are there any particular virtues that you think might play a part?
Well, you have to know yourself and your weaknesses and your good and bad points so you can start from there and work on it.
Right. So you got to have self. You got to understand yourself enough, okay. And that's part of what he's going to give you too, because he's going to not only teach you about himself but also about yourself, because he wants you to be growing. Mm. So if he sees something in you that you don't see in yourself but need to, that's part of what he's going to give you, that understanding. So when you go into your prayer and do your self-examination, he's going to inspire you to understand what that thing is that he wants you to deal with. Okay. And the virtues, what kind of virtues do you think are at part here, at play here?
I think humility.
Humility is always one, right? Queen of the virtues.
Right.
What are the kind of virtues?
Perseverance.
Patience.
Patience is a big one.
Patience.
All around us every day, especially if we're not in a convent, if we're living in the world.
Yeah.
We have to practice patience all the time.
Yeah.
Driving down a road, somebody cuts you off, you know.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff. We deal with patience. You have some you know, your kids start screaming. You got to have patience with screaming kids, you know. They're always a test of patience.
Yesterday at Mass, Father Brian said the 9 o'clock, and I think every kid in the church was crying, singing.
Really? Oh, he has a hard time.
The chorus. It's beautiful. I mean, it was like the whole Mass.
Really? Yeah.
It was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It was unreal.
Yep.
Yeah, we have to have patience with others that, you know, I don't think I have a big thing with anger, but you see other people that, and you're like, why can't they control it? But obviously, that's their weakness, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Just read the news online, read the paper, you know. Look at all the road rage things you read about, you know.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. I don't know if I'm just confessing something here or not, but Mary Beth and I like to watch On Patrol Live. He said, police show?
Oh, yeah.
Where they, you follow the cops around, you know? And we got a big kick out of watching them. Because one of the groups they follow is in Spotsylvania County right here. And so we always wonder, what are they going to do in Spotsy today, you know?
Make sure you're not on the TV.
Make sure you're not out there, right? Don't get arrested because you might be on national television. But when you look at the things that these poor policemen encounter,
yeah.
you know, it's just really amazing.
Yeah.
And you kind of feel sorry for them, you know?
Being a policeman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really feel sorry for them.
No matter what they do, they're always criticized. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
These guys are really, I mean, they, and some of us, talk about, the reason I brought up is because of patience.
Mm.
Some of these people will stop somebody, you know, and what they have to listen to for excuses for what they've done. It's just, they have enormous patience. They had one of them one day standing there, he took somebody out of the car, he was standing there, and this person was going off and giving his big story, you know, and this guy just sitting there with his big grin on his face, just said, you know? But it was really funny. But you know, we're always dealing with patience. Huh. I think patience is something we have to deal with every day.
Especially today.
Especially today, yeah.
Yeah.
What you see, what you hear. Maybe your spouse says something all of a sudden that irritates you. You don't say anything. Mm. You don't have to respond, you know. Just be kind. Mm. So, Diane, be nice to Bob. Bob, be nice to Diane. So you just, you know, there are always opportunities to practice virtue of every kind, you know. So if you look at the list of the cardinal virtues, it's always an opportunity to practice virtue. And once you know what those are, just look at the list sometimes, you know, go through it, see what they are. Mm. And then start looking for ways to practice those in your life.
Mm.
Because like Padre Pio says, you get rid of vices by practicing virtue. Mm. And so the more virtues you try to instill in your soul, in your life, the less vice you're going to encounter, because they take vices away. Mm. And so that's another reason why, because you don't want vices controlling your life, right? You want the virtues. Mm. And so he says, don't ever focus on the vice, because then it's always on your mind. Mm. So focus on the opposing virtue.
Mm.
And that's how you get rid of it. So the virtue is on your mind instead of the vice, and you grow in the virtue. So those are the kind of things that we do. Okay, so why does Teresa say be brave in begging for his grace? Why does it take bravery to ask for this? I thought that was an interesting comment.
Yeah, because, you know, to me it's normal to ask. So you just do it.
You know what I'm thinking? If you ask God you have to step out and know that God is going to, like if you're praying for patience, He's going to send you a lot of instances where you need patience, and that takes a lot of courage.
That takes
so you
got
to be brave in saying, "Yeah, I want this, but I accept what you're going to send me to help me get it."
Yeah.
Do you want to look for all these other things?
Yeah. Claude de Cussy talks about that in his book, where he talks about the sacramentality of the present moment. If you read his thing. And he says, whatever you encounter is because God sent that to you. Mm-hmm. Now, some things you're going to do to yourself. Like if I go rob a bank and I get shot, okay, God didn't do that to me. I did that to myself, right? But in your ordinary everyday life, when something comes to you, because God put that in your life, whether it's an event, a cross of some kind, or a person, whatever. And he said, think of that as the sacramentality of the present moment. Think of it as a sacrament. In a sense, because God gave it to you, right? So there's this kind of a sacramental nature to it. And then just recognize that God gave it to you, so accept it, and then deal with it. And just do it, you know? And he talks about the sacramentality of the present moment, and he puts that into context. He says, don't keep thinking about the past, because you can't change that. Don't be worried about the future, because that's not here yet, and God's in control. Just worry about the present. And think of the present that God is sending you right now. And then deal with that. Don't try to control your future. Because something's going to come up that you can't control.
And how can you... You can't plan for the future. I mean...
You can do a certain amount of hopefully praying, but you never know whether it's going to come through or not, right? So you make all these plans, and then you're always adjusting them.
Yeah.
You know, what's the old saying that a battle plan is always effective until the first shot is fired?
It's military. Yes.
And there's a lot of truth to that, you know, because something's going to come up that you hadn't planned on encountering.
Right.
So.
But I think it's hard for people to accept that some of those things are God's permissive will.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And discerning.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's hard.
It might
you
be
don't think
just
like
a cross.
Yeah.
Of course, if it's a cross, then you accept it as a cross.
Okay.
Yeah.
But to be brave in begging, why would you be afraid? Why would you need bravery to ask for God things? Are you afraid to ask for God stuff?
No. Yes? No.
But maybe she was so holy that she thought if God wanted her to have it, he would give it to her, and she shouldn't be, presuming that she's good enough to ask for something.
Well, some people have a funny notion about God because they think of his majesty, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You remember the Old Testament story about the fellow who tells the leader, ask of God anything you want. And it was King Amos, I think, or some one of them. Mm. And he says, no, I will not put God to the test.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Reading. Yeah, yeah. I remember
in the readings?
Yeah.
And so some people think about that.
Yeah.
I don't want to go ask God for all this stuff because I'm like I'm putting him to the test, you know? And then Naaman. He wants something grand, you know?
And in the gospel today, remember they kept asking for more?
Yeah.
They knew all the miracles.
Yeah, they just didn't appreciate them,
Right, exactly. But I have a friend, dear friend, and she has a victim attitude her whole life. And when you step into that,
that's really bad.
Things happen, you know, but you allow it to happen. I can't
because you always make yourself a victim.
Exactly, But she always says, like, I'm not worthy to ask God.
And I've told her
you hear that
life.
A lot, too.
Yeah. She has that mentality. And she's a good person and a holy person.
I think part of that is what Teresa's driving at here, too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. You have to remember that you are God's child. Now, if you are a parent and have a child, you're going to try to do everything you can for this child, right?
Right. And more for the one that gives you
more trouble,
that needs more help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's
yeah. So you're not going to, just. And so if you realize that who you are, God's child, then you shouldn't be worried or sorry about asking him for stuff.
But your deep faith depends on that. If you have a deep faith and know that God is your father, he's going to take care of you. He loves you. You love your kids. They're not all perfect.
Yeah.
But it's like the level of faith.
And it says, unless you become like a child, you can't have the kind of...
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you have to think, is it a bad child or a good child?
Yeah.
So how do you act like a child to God?
Trust. Just expect him
trust.
To take
ask,
care of
you. You're not afraid to ask. You want to please them. Well, I don't know if kids always want to please them. I don't think they always want to please their parents.
Teresa Little Flower said, whenever I pray, I imagine myself crawling up in the Father's lap and then talking to him. Because she did that as a child with her own father.
Yeah.
You know, so she just translated that to God.
Yeah.
And so she and her whole thing was this unlimited confidence in God. Confidence in his love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the kind of things you want to kind of build up in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
An amazing confidence in God's love for you. And when you think about the fact that he's infinite and he is love, he loves you with an infinite love, then it begins to help you approach him the way he wants you to approach him. You know?
And look at the things that he does. Like kids have a great joy and a wonderment.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, I and this is from sermons and everything. Like Mother Angelica would say, I would look at the sunrise when I get up, and she'd say, I'd say to God, what a beautiful sun you put, you know, today. Things like that.
I do that too, driving in sometimes,
to get
excited, you know, so
about the wonderment.
I turn my car, look in the mirror, you know.
Yeah.
And she did.
I said that when I see all the little bunnies on the way to
so it can't be
gotten. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Right. Yeah, I do that too, Eileen.
Yeah. And kids are open and honest. They'll tell you. I mean, that's where we should be to God.
Right.
I always say, you reach a point, you don't need all these prayer books.
Yeah.
You drive you crazy. More prayers than prayers.
Well, yes, but God knows everything, so he knows if you're not honest, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but he wants us to, and he wants us to be honest, to treat him like we trust him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think some people approach God asking for things with fingers crossed. You know, don't cross your fingers when you're praying to God. Just open your hand.
Yeah.
Just say, please, you know.
You know what I say? The older you get, your prayer chain, I say, I know you can do it. If you want to do it, please do it.
Exactly.
That's what I open up first.
Yeah, that's
parents
true.
Parents used to say, God doesn't like little girls that don't do this, or little boys. That was a common thing.
Yeah.
God, so that maybe that's where people get that
at. Right, the way you're upbringing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes you think of God as this little guy with a hammer that wants to slap you up to the side of the head.
God,
you know,
will get you for that.
And God's going to get you. You know?
Yeah. I grew up with
says that all the time.
With an Irish grandmother, a good holy woman. She'd go all over New York City, but she'd go to a different church every Sunday. But she says, the day I see women on the altar, she says, I'll leave the church. But she'd go around New York City and help. She would speak to strangers, and she would find out what they need.
Oh, wow.
And she would always, we had people come into the house and things like that, but it was her deep faith, and she trusted God in everything. Never, never worried. And she had a hard life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, Padre Pio says that, pray, hope, and don't worry.
Yeah,
she
never
worried. That's his theme, you know?
Mm-hmm. No. Like, her husband died, it was cute. No, I'm not that, it wasn't cute. But I remember coming to the door, and the policeman said, he died. He took care of the boiler in a big building in New York City. And she says, it's his time to go. Life goes on. Mm-hmm. I should have a good marriage, but that's the way Grandma was. Deep faith and very practical.
Yeah.
You know, but a good woman. Very good woman.
And that's an interesting attitude, because a lot of people think of somebody dying as like the end of everything, you know.
Most people.
Yeah.
They don't realize that our life here is very temporary.
Yeah.
You know, eternity is the one that's forever.
Yeah.
So that's where your focus
should be. And she always said,
be,
life
you know?
Goes on.
Yeah.
Like that was Grandma.
She keeps waiting for God to call her.
Yeah. When my son was, Mike was going through his hospice, we talked a lot. Mm. And he said he wasn't afraid, you know, to die or anything like that. And so the thought I kept having in my mind was, I'm looking forward to seeing him again, you know.
Seeing him again. Right. The joy. The hope.
So I talk to him every day.
Yeah.
You know?
I look at John's picture. I go, one day less, we're going to be there. We'll see you.
Yeah.
It's not morbid.
Yeah.
So sometimes I wonder why the presentation in the temple, why Simeon, God allowed him to see the Messiah before he died. And I thought, wasn't he going to see him after he died?
I think he did that for us.
Yeah, a different reason.
Yeah, for a different reason.
Uh-huh.
So that would end up in Scripture.
Yeah, that's all.
And that we would read that.
Yeah.
So it's really telling all of us.
Yeah.
Okay, once we have this encounter with God,
right?
Now you can take me, God, because that's where I'm going to heaven.
Right, and maybe to persevere in prayer. He was waiting for the Messiah to come. He didn't give up.
And St. Monica said, now you can take me, and she got the flu.
Yeah.
And Anna. I mean, that's just
faith.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for us, right?
Yeah,
for
all those things are for us.
For us.
Yeah. Mm. It's just like the guy that said, you know, don't enter my house.
Yeah.
But my servant will be healed. And we say that at Mass now. Mm-hmm. And Jesus said, everybody will remember this encounter, you know, and sure enough, it ends up right in the Mass.
I had you answer that question, because I always had that in my heart. Like, why was Jesus lost in the temple? Why'd you allow that? But then you just said it for us.
Uh-huh.
Sure. Yeah, right. It's all for us.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now that answers the question.
And so what does that tell us? When we're lost, go to the Blessed Mother.
Right.
Her job is to find you and bring you to her Son, right?
Right.
So always trust in her.
Yeah.
Look at all the people she rescues. You know? I mean, good grief.
Mm.
She rescued Mary Beth. Mary Beth thought she was an atheist.
And look who she
And look what she is now.
To her.
Yeah, she's one of the strongest Catholics I know. You know?
I think it's like a foreshadowing of, you know, the passion that she's lost, and then she found him.
Yeah.
And she had anxiety that, you know, where's her child? And then she had this great joy at the end that she found him.
Sure.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, God is always answering prayer. You know, I was thinking the other day that if somebody had told me when I was a junior in college that I would marry somebody who was born that year, I would have told them they're out of their freaking minds, you know. But a lot of things had to happen before that could happen, right? I could marry a three-year-old.
Yeah. It's funny to think of it.
But yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was funny. We talked about that a lot. We were dating.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we talked about not just now, but the future. You know, what's it going to be like and all.
Yeah.
And we said, well, we got enough good things going that we'll just worry about that later. So
yeah.
We did.
Wow.
And 38 years later, we're still waiting.
Whatever, if you knew in college, whatever you think, it's not going to be that way.
Well, that's true.
It's going to be
that's true.
You don't know that.
That's true. That's true. So we can, we can be brave because we trust in God.
Mm.
And we have to overcome our hesitation as fallible human beings to trust in His eternal goodness.
Yeah.
Teresa says that He shows us the way so that the soul might dig until it finds this treasure that lies within our very selves. So what's she really saying here? He's showing us the way, what way?
The way to Him.
The way to Him.
The way to Him.
Yeah. The way to Him. You're right. He even told us in the gospel, I am the way, the truth, and the life, you know? And so he shows us the way we have to go, the path we have to take to find Him. And every one of us is going to be on a different path. Every single one of us. We're all heading for the same place. We're all maybe have paths that are close to each other. Some paths are far away, you know? But it's like you're walking down this path and you look over at somebody on another path, you wave and say, hey, how's your trip going, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I'll meet you later at the end.
I'll see you at the gate, you know?
So it really is surprising in the gospel this morning why the Egyptians ignored all those signs when their God is present before them. How can you deny a miracle?
Probably because they looked at the Pharaoh as divine.
Oh, I never thought of that.
They figured that he could probably do anything.
Oh yeah, maybe they.
You know, I think that had a lot to do with it.
Mm. Well, like when Carol was healed of MS in our house, we went out in the street. We were like, the neighbors were all congregating, and there was a Catholic next to me who, in name only, and then there was a Catholic up the street. They went to church, but the one that went to church couldn't accept it.
She said she
never had MS.
I know, isn't it?
She's, yeah. I said, yeah, she pretended she had MS.
Yeah.
It's hard to pretend.
That was fun.
They just couldn't accept it.
They can't accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw it. Mm-hmm. She wasn't crippled.
That's what's crazy.
Yeah.
Like Fatima.
Did you guys see that it was a Eucharistic miracle in Latin America?
No. Another one?
Yeah, did you hear about that?
I don't know. There was one recently.
Yeah, recently, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they were in the area where it didn't have many priests. And so in some Sundays they had a communion service, so the guy went in to do it, and the ciborium was wood, it wasn't metal, which I thought was very surprising too. But anyway, it was on this corporal, and he picked it up, and the corporal had bloodstains all over it. So he took it out, gave out communion and everything, and it told the people they wanted to see it. Now they sent it to the bishop, and so they wondered, well, was this some kind of animal blood that somebody put there just to kind of fool everybody, you know? So the bishop sat on it for a while, trying to figure out what he was going to do with it. They had it in a bag of some kind, like a Ziploc bag or something. And so finally he decided to have it examined. So they sent it to one place and said, well, we don't have the things to do that. Sent it to someplace else where they finally examined it. And he said it was human blood, and it was type AB.
The universal donor. It's always the same type. All those Eucharistic miracles.
Yeah. And it's the same type as on the Shroud of Turin.
Because it's God's blood.
It's God's blood.
Exactly.
Wow.
I think that's amazing.
That is.
Yeah. Another interesting thing about God's blood, too, considering that we receive it. A good friend of mine was Father Sweeney out in Utah. And I think he's passed now. But he was pastor of Holy Family Church out there. And then he retired and he was in a nursing home. So I used to go out there and visit him. And then I called one day and said he wasn't there anymore. But they didn't say what happened to him, so I haven't been out. But anyway, he had you see miracles too. His chalice would bleed.
Oh my gosh.
It started several years ago, where the first time it bled, all he uses was white wine. He never used red wine for Mass. And he noticed this red substance pouring into the bowl of the chalice after he consecrated it. And he said, I didn't know what to do with it, so I just drank it.
Oh.
And then, which is, that's what he's doing anyway, right?
Right.
He's consecrated.
Yeah.
And then it started happening more. Huh. And it started bleeding on the outside of the chalice as well as the inside.
So did his parish see it?
Well, his parish saw it, yeah. In fact, they even made a video about it. Ricardo Montalban was the host for. It was called The Father's Gift. Hmm. It was all about the Eucharistic miracles. And so it started bleeding so profusely that he had to have a special patent made to catch the blood.
Wow.
And then he had corpuscles all over the place, you know. And so I saw it on that video, and then I mentioned it on an internet chat group that we had. And it turned out that one of the people in the chat group was one of his parishioners. And she said, how'd you find out about this? You know, he said, that's our pastor. That's really happening, you know. And so I guess I got to meet them. And so I found out where he was. And
where was he?
Ogden, Utah.
Ogden.
Right in the middle of Mormon country, yeah.
Wow.
And so I started signing up for these software engineering conferences at Salt Lake City, because then I could go run up to you.
Right.
Up Ogden and meet him. So the first time we went was on Divine Mercy weekend. Mm. And so we went up there, took Mary Beth and the boys, we all went up there, and we got to meet him. And we did the Divine Mercy thing, and he heard our confessions and all this kind of stuff. And instead of cleaning the chalice after Mass, he let Nathan go up with my camera and take pictures of the chalice and all with the blood streaks going down the side of it and all like that. So we have those pictures. And that was kind of cool. And so then every year I would try to sign up for the engineering conference and go out there so I could go meet him, go spend time with him again. So we had to be really good friends.
Yeah.
And we'd talk on the phone a lot and stuff like this. But he was an amazing fella. Mm. And one day I asked, and then after a while the miracle stopped. Mm. Sort of stopped, and then it stopped altogether. And I asked him, well, why did it start? And why did it stop? He said, I don't know.
Mm.
He said, if Jesus wants me to know, he'll tell me.
But remember the ones in Woodbridge?
Oh, with Fuller.
The statue bleeding.
Yeah.
And they said, or the rumor was, that it stopped because the people didn't change their lives. They
was that right?
They take it as like the Egyptians.
Yeah, and the bishop got upset with that, too, so he transferred him down to...
Oh, yeah, that bishop was thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't want anything to do with it.
Was that the Father Bruce?
Yeah, Father Bruce, yeah.
Oh, I forgot the name.
He was the one that...
Yeah.
That he went to... It was a parish down in the northern neck.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he ended up getting transferred as far away from Arlington as possible.
Right. But, you know, at the time that went on, where I was working, there was a newspaper guy, and we talked from time to time. And he was supposed to go down there and see it, and he was a non-practicing Catholic. And he came into the office, and he said to me, I'm going to go down there, he said, and now if it's doing, I'm going to have to go back to church.
Oh.
Well, he went down there, and he said, it was true. I said, and you're going back to church? Well, I'll think about it.
See, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
After seeing something like that.
Yeah.
That's really something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, don't be afraid to ask God for anything. He's infinite. Hmm. There's nothing you could ask for that's too big for him to do, right? Or too hard for him to do. So he's going to do what he knows you need.
Hmm.
Ask him for everything you want, and then he's going to give you maybe some of that, but maybe something you didn't ask for because he knows you need it. But by asking, you're showing your dependence on him and your trust in him.
Mm.
Just the mere act of asking shows that you understand you're dependent on him.
Mm-hmm. And
that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's humility.
Yeah, that's part of humility. Mm. Exactly. So Teresa says that he will show us the way, so may dig until he finds the treasure.
Mm.
It lies within our very selves. So the treasure is him, and he lies in the center of your soul. So the next question is, who is doing what in this process of arriving at infused contemplation? And where in us is this treasure we have to dig to find? How do we do the digging? We know where it is, right?
Yeah.
We know what it is. Mm. How do we do the digging?
Well, go along with it. Continue praying.
Just doing what Teresa
Wait
says.
For God. We're talking
Just
about
doing
it.
All the things
yeah.
we're talking about,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Now keep your soul clean and and look forward to that encounter.
Mm.
I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in the immediacy, well, how do I pray? How do I do this? So we lose sight of the goal that we're shooting for.
Yeah.
So you always want to keep that end goal in mind, you know. It's like being a quarterback in football. You have to make a first down, but you also, your goal is to get a touchdown. And you want to keep that touchdown in mind all the time. And that touchdown is that spiritual marriage with Christ.
Mm. And I get the impression from my deep knowledge of theology that you can't plot and plan. You know, we have to do our part, but it's, what was I going to say now? It's the action of the Holy Spirit that is leading us.
Yeah.
Whether we know it or not.
Yeah. It's
guiding us.
What you're doing in your part is doing what you think you can to make yourself disposed so that God can act. You're trying to set yourself up to be open to Him to be able to act in you.
Yeah.
You don't do anything that's going to hinder His acting in you. So you don't try to control what He does, but all you do is try to make yourself as disposed as possible for Him to be able to act in you. And that's the big thing we have to do. Because we don't know what He's going to do with us.
Mm.
Like she says, you know, this is what happened to me, but that's not going to be necessarily what happens to you.
And how would we know how to do it? You know, you have to leave it to God.
You got to leave it to God.
The author of all life.
And you got to trust that if He wants you to enter that spiritual marriage with Him, He's going to do what it takes to make that happen. So you just make yourself disposed.
Mm.
And that's the big thing. People try to say, well, I got to do this, I got to do that, blah, blah, blah. No, you make yourself disposed by, you know, following all the commandments, keeping yourself free of sin, and be as virtuous as you can in your life. Practice the virtues. And the next point, she kind of emphasizes that. She says, Teresa makes the point that the Lord strengthens the soul, and that physical bodily strength is not necessary. Because He has a lot of people that are infirm, that are very spiritual, you know, that He works with. God wants everyone to be able to arrive here, even if they have physical deformities. And she says, He is content if each one gives what he has. He doesn't want you to hold on to anything so that you will be able to enjoy the favors we are speaking of. Whether you have little or much, He wants everything for Himself. And in conformity with what you know you have given, you will receive greater or lesser favors. So the question is, how do you know what it is you're giving? And how do you know if you're holding back in giving of yourself to God? What might cause you to hold back?
Because we always want to be in charge. And
pride.
Pride.
Laziness, too. You don't want to be bothered doing all this stuff.
I think people are afraid.
Yeah.
They say, if I offer everything to you.
Oh, yeah, it's scary.
What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do to me if I offer everything to you? You know, I think that's the big thing with people.
Yeah.
They're afraid.
Yeah.
They're uncertain about what God's going to do, knowing that He can do anything, and then they're afraid of what that might be.
Yeah, so they don't trust Him.
Basically, the whole Bible is about trust.
Trust.
Exactly. So the whole idea is you've got to just trust God.
Yeah.
You trust in His love for you. You know, no matter what He does to you, anything He does to you is an act of love.
Yeah.
That's the thing that you have to keep in mind all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it is, whether it's disease or stubbing your toe or you're having a car accident, whatever it happens to be, you know, anything that happens is an act of love for God. Because He's drawing you closer to Him. He's making you more and more dependent on Him. And so if you have a growing sense of your dependence on God, that's the first step.
Mm.
And then letting yourself be open to whatever it is He wants you to do with you.
Without being a quietist.
That's right.
I think that's easy to fall into when you're talking like this.
Sure, yeah.
And I always say when I wake up, I always thank God another day, thank you for this new day. And I say, it depends on what ailment I have today, or the pain right. after my neck up, right? I go, well, you want me to serve you like this today? I'll do it this way. Might not be as quick, might not be as alert, but this is what I give you today.
Right.
My physical state.
Yeah, sure. That's all you can do. That's all you can do, right?
That's all you can do.
That's right. All you can do.
Yeah.
Okay, it's 10:29. Let's stop here. We'll pick up here with 5132 next time. Anybody have any final thoughts before we close for the day?
Good chat. I said it was a good chat.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you very much.
Good discussion, Benny.
Yeah. Thank you for coming, and I will hope to see you next week. Have a great week, everybody.
And Mary Beth.
Yeah,
just
thank
keep,
you.
Just keep praying.
It's all in my prayer.
Thank you very much.
Regards to Mary
Beth. Okay, thank you.
Stupid call.
See you.
You have you had your appointment with the physician?
We have the first appointment with the oncologist surgeon on Wednesday.
Huh?
At that point, we'll have some kind of a schedule then. So we'll know when the surgery is, when...
That's my daughter's car.
What hospital are you?
Mary Washington. In Fredericksburg.
It's nice and handy.
Yeah, it's really close. Because we live down in Govey, so it's a lot closer to us.
I want to show you this. You see that car that's before it went into the water?
Oh.
Oh, my gosh.
That is Minnesota yesterday.
Oh,
my
yeah.
daughter sent this to me last night. Her daughter was driving the car. The brother was in the car and a cousin. They had come from Mass, and she didn't want to go shopping in Mom's car. She said, give me your car. So she took it. She's a good kid. But she's just graduating college, and she goes a little too fast in the car.
Yeah.
But she's good. But anyway, they were going around this mountain area, because they all had the cabins up there for a week, and she couldn't manage the curve, and it was going down into the water. So the car hit the pebbles, and she couldn't stop.
Yeah.
But maybe that prevented her from going worse. So